For sure.
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 Welcome back to the For Sure podcast. Yes, it is me, Jay, introing this because, well, as we all know, we all live lives outside of this podcast, and unfortunately, Pete has been living life to the fullest, and as such, he is dog tired because he has recently acquired a new four-legged companion who has made it its life mission to make sure Peter has the least amount of sleep possible. So, Peter, how are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm surprisingly okay for right now. In about an hour, I might be crashing, but I'm okay for right now.
Okay, good, good, good to know. So just for everybody who know, who's listening out there, Pete is on borrowed time. So we will make sure that we treat him well. And because this is a special occasion of me actually introing the episode, I'm actually going to call somewhat of an audible and actually welcome in our interview guest this week, because we're not sure if she's going to get whisked away to a foreign country even during this interview. It's Katie Strang from The Athletic. Hi, Katie.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Very, very good. You and I have been trying to figure out a time for you to be able to come back on the show. But recently, every time we would talk, it's, you know, some excuse about working on some story, and just not having time. And so, yesterday, as we record this, that story was published. And so, we wanted to have you on anyway, but, obviously with how, important this story is, it made a really good, a really good reason, I guess. We can just jump right in, and just in case, I'm not sure exactly like what we're gonna, get into as we start talking. But for our listeners, we just wanted to make sure that they know, if you stop this and read the story first, or maybe if we, depending on what we talk about, the story contains allegations of sexual abuse. And so we just wanted to make sure up front that we told people that's what we're talking about, in case, that's something that they might not want to listen to, or, they need to make arrangements if they, if you have kids in the car, maybe not the best episode to listen to right now. But I just wanted to start with this. Like I said, obviously this is something you've been working on for a long time. And I'm interested in not just the journalistic process, but kind of the human process of going through and, working on this for so long, reporting it out, doing all these interviews, obviously the writing process, et cetera. And it kind of goes from this thing that you are working on that you know about, all of a sudden it's out in the world and like everybody now knows it exists. And it's like, you've been living with it for so long and now everybody else is seeing it. So what's that like as a writer?
One of my coworkers, texted me yesterday and she said, "Congratulations on birthing your third child." and that's kind of what it feels like. I have two little girls. But this was such, a labor of love and something that I was really passionate about and cared about and worked for a very long time on. Not quite as long as a pregnancy, but between 3 and 4 months. And so I really, hunkered down and devoted kind of all my time and resources into just investigating this piece. So I was really relieved to have it out into the universe, not just, for my own mental well-being, but because, so many of these courageous men that have come forward and spoke out, like some of them, the first time that we talked was over 3 months ago. So I felt so eager and anxious to get this out into the world because I knew it had to, it was weighing on me, it had to have been, weighing on them enormously as well. And so I think from their standpoint, they feel very happy that it's finally out there and that they got to share their story in a way, I think, that made them feel empowered and hopefully take sort of another step on that path to healing.
Yeah, and I mean, if I remember correctly, you know, a while ago, you wrote about a similar topic with the in the gymnastics world, right? I just want to make sure I'm remembering correctly, right?
Yes, I did cover the, you know, the Nassar scandal for, you know, the better part of a year. So, and I've done a few of these within the hockey world as well.
Hmm.
And then, you know, the intersection of sports and sexual abuse is something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm convinced happens quite a bit more than we'd like to believe. And I think, you know, having that sort of exposure, seeing these sort of stories, understanding, you know, what to look for in terms of identifying patterns of grooming and manipulation and exploitation is really important for people to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Katie, during the process of writing an article like this, is there, you know, like, I guess this is more of a just a logistics question, like what's the clearance process here? How much of this is, you know, is like, was this something you had done a while ago and you were just waiting for everybody to kind of like sign off and say, yeah, this can go out there? I mean, obviously there are some cases where like, you don't get that. Like, it's not about giving everybody a heads up because it still is a journalistic piece. But, you know, how much of it is actually like the work, and then how much of it waiting for someone else to actually be like, okay, yeah, we're going to press send.
Yeah. So I would say, like, if we look at it as, let's say, on the more conservative estimate, say it took me about 4 months. It would actually start to finish is about 4 months.
Okay.
So I would say the reporting process took about 3 months. And then the writing and also the vetting, fact-checking, editorial process took about an additional month.
Oh, so that's good. I for some reason in my head I was like Katie had this written 4 years ago, and, you know, because I know that like vetting and you know background and all that can take a while, so. You know, I guess that helps in the you know, as a, I'd like to say as a pedestrian to the journalistic process, it's pretty interesting to hear about, you know, I think there's probably been like one other time where I've been able to like kind of grasp like, oh, okay, so you're, yep, okay, yep, are we doing it today? No, okay, wait, no, okay, all right, yep, there we go, it's out there now. So. Glad it's out there.
Yeah, because I was listening the other day to a podcast where it was Preet Bharara's show where he interviews people, and he had Ronan Farrow on to talk about catching.
I love both of them.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
By the way.
And I really enjoy the Stay Tuned podcast because it's one of those things where sometimes. You know, because there's so many podcasts in the world, and like I like so many of them, and sometimes I have to find myself like, oh, am I going to listen to this one? Oh, you know, maybe it'll depend on the topic or the guest. And there are some times where I'm like, I don't know if I'm really going to be interested in this one. And then I start listening, I'm like fascinated. But yeah, I know. You know, one of the things that they talked about in their talk was, you know, the process that you know Ronan and the people he was working with had to go through to get. You know, like fact checking, you know, because, you know, obviously it's not exactly the same situation, but, you know, these are obviously very serious allegations. And, you know, I just thought that was interesting, you know, how much time and how much effort goes into that, which makes sense because obviously, you know, in the reporting process, you're doing, you know, your absolute best to get, you know, accurate information, you know, but sometimes, you know, you can get multiple versions of stories from multiple people. And I'm sure it can be hard to try to, you know, track down and figure out, okay, like what, you know, what do I think the real story is here?
Yeah. I mean, the fact checking and sort of corroboration verification process can be exhaustive, especially for a lengthy piece that, you know, has multiple degrees of difficulty in terms of, you know, multiple allegations from, you know, a long time ago, such and such. I haven't listened to it yet, but on Ronan Farrow's Catch and Kill podcast, I know that he devoted an entire episode just to that fact-checking process and, you know, his guardian angels, his fact-checkers that helped him with that piece. I'm fascinated to listen to that myself, just because, you know, they have a dedicated arm to doing just that.
Right, yeah.
So overall, Katie, I know that there's a bunch of times where there's, you know, like going into a story, you know, like kind of emotionally and like kind of like prepare yourself for it. So I guess I don't know how often, if at all, people ask this, but like, how are you? I know these things can weigh. I know these things can weigh on you because, again, this is material that is really tough to even just read about, so then even more so to think about the people that actually went through it. So, you know, how are you in the scheme of things?
That's really kind of you to ask, and I really appreciate that. It's really thoughtful, actually. I'm doing well. You are correct that it does take a ton out of me emotionally, because, you know, not just the time that you invest and the emotional investment, but, you know, you want to do right by the people who trust you with such sensitive, personal, private, life-changing, life-altering moments, right? And you want to do that story justice for them. And so I think that is sort of at the nexus of why it creates such a deep emotional investment on my part. I can tell you that yesterday morning, I'm not a morning person. Mm. My husband is that part of our of our relationship. And I was up at 4 a.m. and doing like burpees and sled pushes at the gym at 5 a.m. because I was such a ball of nerves. And the reason why is, you know, the guys that, you know, talk to me for my story, they're not public people, right? And so I wanted them... I hoped that they would be happy with how their stories were portrayed and how their story was delivered, you know, within the narrative structure. And I also was nervous for them because I know that, you know, even if they were entirely happy with that, even if the outpouring was almost, you know, wholly supportive and positive, which it was, that it could also leave them feeling super vulnerable and exposed. And so I just, my heart was racing the entire day just because I had that sort of concern and worry for them. But they, you know, they were all great. They're, you know, like I said, they're very tough, courageous guys. And, you know, whenever I would sort of feel nervous or upset, like I would always just think about the incredible strength that it required for them to do this. And they did so, not, you know, because they thought it was easy, but because they thought it was necessary to ensure that no one else went through what they had gone through. And, you know, when you stop to kind of consider that, you know, that always buoyed me when there were frustrating times during this is, you know, their courage and their bravery.
I had a question about the actual writing process of it. You know, you've done all the reporting, you have all this information. You know, obviously the goal is to have, you know, a good, I think you said to yourself, like, you know, a strong narrative structure that, you know, guides the reader through the story. Like that's kind of like a fundamental, you know, foundation. You have all this information. You talk to all these people. So how difficult is it to, you know, to kind of balance the, you know, including as much as you can, but then also making sure that, you know, like, let's say there's like one story that you think is interesting, but it doesn't fit into the narrative structure, you know? So it's like, at that point, would you, you know, just be like, okay, this part's not going to fit in, or like maybe try to find a way to change the structure to make it fit. Like, how do you go through that process? Because I imagine it must be pretty difficult, you know, especially because, like you said, these people are sharing, you know, these hard stories, and I imagine you want to include as much as possible, but you also want the finished product to be as effective as possible. So, like, how do you balance that?
Yeah, it's really, really hard, and especially with a project of this scope. Like, I went at the very end, I essentially aggregated, like collated every interview that I did, and put it into sort of one big, you know, file. And I did, I think, approximately 120 interviews. And so even like the process of going through all those to just wrap my head around all the information that was there, you know, took about a week. And, you know, it's very difficult to take that abundance of information and distill it in a way that is going to serve the story and serve the reader's understanding of the story. And what I can tell you is, you know, my first draft of the story, I think it was close to 11,000 words. The final version that ran yesterday was about 7,000. So, you know, we cut it significantly by about a third. And that's never easy, but I have an amazing editor. His name's George Dorman. He's an incredible journalist in his own right. He won a Pulitzer. And he's fantastic about, you know, really trimming the fat and identifying what is important for the reader to know and what is sort of non-essential. And he's also really, you know, we've worked together for a couple of years now and have a great relationship. He's also really great at, like, if I say, this has got to stay. I don't do that lightly, but he almost always will honor that. So it's a very collaborative process, but a very healthy one, and it takes some time. And, you know, for just kind of giving you an idea of how the sausage is made on this one, but we decided that in order to serve the story and the reader's understanding of, you know, this guy's pattern, not just in the way he approached players, but also in the way he moved from job to job, that it was going to serve the reader to lay it out in a very simple, logical, chronological structure. And that's not something I typically do, but I think it worked in this case, and so that's why we did it.
You know, like I said, as I was reading through and like thinking about, you know, questions to ask you, that's definitely something I thought, because I knew that you had done all these interviews, and obviously it's impossible to include everything, even given how long it was. So yeah, in the story, one of the things, one of the things you talk about is how you have, you know, as he's making his way, you know, from team to team and community to community, you know, he's basically doing the same trick, I guess you could call it. And, you know, I thought it was interesting how sometimes, you know, it's just one person who's kind of dealing with this. And then in other teams, it's like a group of people who basically all have this, you know, this shared thing. So when you were reporting for this, was it kind of the same thing where, you know, you're trying to talk to all these people, and I imagine, you know, some people are going to be hesitant to talk about something like this. So is it the kind of case where, like, once one or two people share, you know, tell you something, that it's then easier to have other people talk to you about it?
Not really in this case, and here's why. You know, ethically, I don't really believe in saying, hey, so-and-so told me this, so if that changes your internal calculus of whether you'd like to disclose, that's good for me. Like, it's really dicey from an ethical perspective, because you don't want to ever put yourself in a position where you could be perceived as trying to entice someone to disclose something by making it clear that someone else has disclosed the same thing. That makes me uncomfortable.
Sure.
Because I don't think you ever want to be seen as influencing or, you know, kind of shaping a narrative before you have all your facts. So I typically didn't do that. Like, I mean, there were situations where, like in the Minnesota case, other people were aware of the other people. So that was slightly different.
Yeah.
But in the other cases, I really didn't. What I would do is, I mean, I cold called. Every person that was within that story is someone that I found by cold call, basically. And what I would say is, hey, I'm calling as many people as possible who intersected with this man and who, you know, personally or professionally, and who played for him or coached with him or just knew him from the ring. And I wanted to see if you had any information that you wanted to share or any experience that you think is worth me knowing about. And that's how it went. So that's why it takes some time, right? Is I went through and just called a bunch of people and asked what they knew. And you know, sometimes it would be helpful. Like, people would say, I think you should talk to this person. I think this person would be a good person worth calling. But that was why it was very labor intensive, is I wanted to try to do as thorough of a job as I could. And there were a few hurdles in the sense that, you know, bless Hockey DB and Elite Prospects that they're around now. But, you know, in the 80s or 90s, those rosters for like midget teams aren't, or junior teams aren't available. So it was hard to even locate who played for him in some scenarios. So it was hard. It was hard and painstaking. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've never, you know, written anything close to this, or, you know, number one, in terms of the subject matter, but number two, in terms of like the complexity of, you know, talking to so many people. I do feel like I can empathize a little bit on the part where it's like you have something you're working on for a long time and then you're wondering how it's going to be perceived. Cause like when I presented at Rochester, you know, that was a project I worked on on and off for probably 6 months. And I know I was like going in, I was like terrified that people were going to be like, oh, this is dumb. It's like you wasted, you know, half a year of your life on, you know, and like I said, obviously completely different subject matter and completely different, you know, forms. But yeah, that was, it was like a relief to just have it out there and have it done. So I wanted to wrap up with, you know, obviously this is, you know, we've been talking about the article, we're talking about, you know, the more serious stuff, but so I wanted to close with like, you know, kind of like more fun stuff. Like, so what are you, you know, what are you doing for fun now? Like, I know we talked about, and I know in the past we talked about cooking, like we both share a love for cooking.
So
what's going on? Like, what's new outside of this part of your life?
I would love to say that this hasn't been all-consuming, but it really has been. And I, you know what, to be honest, I suspect it will be for quite some time. I don't think the story is done, and I will continue to report and follow it as it requires. But I also have an 8-month-old, so that keeps me pretty busy. She's super fun, though. She's like the easiest, most good-natured baby. You know, my 3-year-old's a total shit kicker and keeps me on my toes in a much different way. But they're great. They're both, they keep us on our toes and they're really fun. But I do still like to like cook, a lot to unwind. It's so funny. I like, I don't know if it like comes with like slumming it a little bit, but like I was over at, a friend's house for, she had a sip and see, which is like, you know, sometimes what you do instead of like in lieu of a baby shower, you bring like after you have the baby, you have a little party and people come over and drink wine and just, you know, snuggle on the baby. And it was really fun. But her mom, who is a great cook, she brought out this cookbook for me. And it was like, you know, one of those like really stock standard Southern living, like easy weeknight meals.
Right.
And I am not a Southerner by any degree, and nor is she, really. But, oh, my God, I found so many delicious recipes, and they're, like, the most butterific, unhealthy things ever. But I made one of them last week, and it was incredible and so easy. Like, she's like, this is not one of those things where it's, like, easy weeknight dinner, only 5 minutes of prep. And then it actually takes, like, 40 minutes.
Right.
This legitimately took like 5 minutes to prep and 30 minutes to cook. It was so good.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I am still cooking. Yay. I do still make time to cook, and I've been trying to, you know, in terms of managing stress, I've been trying to get into the gym much more frequently and do yoga and do kickboxing and release some of that, you know, tension and anger. And I've been trying to hold myself accountable and reading a lot more this past year. And I was able to read a ton on maternity leave, which was awesome. It kind of like re-stoked the fire for reading.
Yeah, I know that last one's hard for me. I mean, even though like, I'm an English teacher, people are like, oh, aren't you reading all the time? It's like, well, not really. Like, I don't really have time to read for pleasure. You know, I'm reading all this other stuff that I have to read. And, you know, if you know, once you read, you know, 15 student essays that, like, make you want to throw them in the garbage, you know, it's kind of hard. You know, you kind of lose your passion for reading that day.
Totally. I get it.
We're going to let you go, but thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to come on with us. Obviously, like, you know, the reception of the article from everything I've seen has been very, very positive. So for our listeners, if you haven't yet read it, you know, definitely go out and find that article. I know as of right now, it's still beyond the paywall. I know sometimes with articles that like are this type of article, you know, kind of like bigger picture than just sports. I know sometimes they'll be made available to everybody. So maybe in the future. But Katie, thank you so much for taking some time out and talking to us.
Of course, I'm always happy to join you guys. I hope you have a good week.
And with that, we are going to take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to have the extreme honor of introducing a very personal segment of mine. So we'll see you on the other side. And we are back. Thank you so much once again to Katie Strang for taking time out of her busy schedule to talk with two schmucks on a podcast. So this next very long winded segment, just kidding. We're actually trying to distill our rants. So I'm very excited, very privileged, and very humbled to introduce one Peter effing Flynn.
Oh, God.
Or today's minute or less rant. And again, it's a subject that you are very well aware that we talk about a lot, but again, the circumstances definitely warrant it. So Peter, take it away.
We try to limit our ranting about the Department of Player Safety to particularly egregious instances, because if it wasn't for that, we would probably have something to complain about every single episode that we record, except I guess during the off season. But George Parros needs to step down. He needs to resign, and he needs to do it right now, because I don't know if it's him personally. I don't know if it's people that he hired to work with him that are making these bad decisions. But Zach Cassian kicked a player in the chest with a skate on purpose. And it's just baffling to me that is not clearly a huge suspension, because, you know, we've seen it in the past, unfortunately, in accidental cases, like with Clint Malarchuk, with Richard Zednik. I mean, Red Wings fans just saw recently, you know, Brendan Perlini accidentally got clipped in the face, and it was, the picture we saw afterwards was after they, they stitched him up, and it still looked, you know, pretty horrendous. It's not too hard to see a situation in which he goes to do that and he either misses or his skate hits like the padding on the chest and then kicks up. Right. It's not that hard to envision a situation in which that happens. It's just mind blowing to me that a play like that is given 7 games. Right. Which you might say, oh, well, that's a lot compared to some other things. But when you take into account that most suspensions are way too short, I don't think that that's a really good argument. So, it's an egregious, just horrible, decision, and you know there needs to be somebody new at that position. It's not going to happen, but there should be. The end.
Very, very well said. I agree on every point, and it's well past time for a change in that particular department of the National Hockey League. So, Pete, we wanted to, you know, again, at the time of this recording, the trade deadline is less than 48 hours. Jeez, probably less than 36 hours, huh? You know, it's like 12:44 p.m. Yeah, so it's pretty darn close. By the time this airs, many deals or no deals or some deals or a smattering of deals, a smidgen of deals, a gargantuan amount of deals could have happened. So that pretty much just restricts Peter and I to speculation. So, Pete, from what you've seen, and I realize that because even though you're dog tired, you've been keeping your finger so close to the pulse of the trade market. What do you think is, you know, we've obviously seen the defenseman market active, not really too many forwards so far, but obviously I think that's where GMs like to kind of, you know, hold their hand close to the chest for Monday. I will say one of my favorite things that I have seen so far actually is not from any team whatsoever, but from my beloved friends, Jayon Wright and Dan O'Toole, who recorded a very funny, like, 40-second PSA thing for their show on SportsCenter. And it was basically them, like, general managers, please save your trades for Monday. Did you know that one trade equals, like, 45 minutes of content? that means that nine trades or something could be like, that means just 10 trades or whatever could like equal 9 hours of content. And that is just half of the runtime of Trade Center. So, you know, the plea to keep your deals until Trade Center and actually keep James Duthie employed. That was actually a lot of fun. But the idea about this segment is that Pete and I talk about trade things. So, Pete, what do you expect to see? What do you think? What's... You know what? Screw that. Not what you expect to see. What is the least possible thing you expect to see happen on Monday?
Wait, hold on. The least possible thing that I expect to see?
Yeah.
I don't know
how
to put those words together.
What's the thing that's not going to happen? I know. I know that was a mean joke on my part. I was playing word salad for you. So what don't you think is going to happen? That you would actually want yourself to happen. What, like, I guess maybe that's the way I wanted to word it, because it's just like, what do you think should happen, but you know won't, or think won't, you know? Because I mean, to give you an example, I want a completely dumbfounding trade to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but I want it to happen. So, in your words, what do you think?
I think what's going to happen, and I think this is kind of a, I'm not really stepping too far out here, I don't think. I'm going to predict that one of the top teams, you know, one of the Stanley Cup contender teams, makes a trade that makes us all be very upset because they are going to acquire a good player or something of value, for a far cheaper price than they should pay for it. We've already seen that with Boston getting Case. I've actually never heard his name pronounced. I'm guessing it's Case from Anaheim. Of course, it's hockey, so it's probably something like Kasha or something. And I'm gonna laugh if that's true, because like I said, I just realized as I was warming up to, as I was like getting to the part of the sentence where I was gonna say his name, I had a thought that I don't remember ever hearing his name pronounced. I've read a lot about him, especially recently, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody say his name. So anyway, that guy. You know, Boston got him for, they certainly didn't seem to pay a premium for a player that's probably going to slot into their second line, and that's pretty scary, right? Boston got better, so I think one of the other teams like Tampa, maybe I don't think this team is in the same level of a contender, but Toronto seems to be a team where other GMs seem to like to help them out for some reason. You're in a cap crunch here. Let us help you. For some reason, and it's not just Kyle Dubas. It's like this has happened for years. This happened before then. Also, just in case if anybody missed it, former and future for sure guest Sean McIndoe, aka Down Goes Brown, had a fantastic article. I think it was yesterday, if not it was recently, where he put together the all-time team based solely of players that the Leafs have traded away. And it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic.
That's
right. Yep. So I don't know. I have a feeling that Toronto is going to do something big. I don't know. Maybe just my gut, but I do think that that's going to happen. Because as of right now, they are in, they're potentially in a position to not make the playoffs, which would be absolutely brutal and devastating for that team. And I think could lead to some massive changes, although who knows. It's Toronto. You can never predict what's going to go on there, except that the media is going to be completely awful, just like a couple other cities. So is there anything specific you think is going to happen?
Well, based on what I've seen, I would I don't know. I guess it's always tough to say. Again, we're talking about you and me. We're talking about Pierre and Jay. And then there are the very, there are the Bob McKenzie's and the Darren Dragers of the world that, like, have, obvious more insight, and even they can be completely left in the dust on what could or should happen. But I guess what I would like to see is, from a personal standpoint, I'd like to see the Wings do something. I think they are going to do something. I mean, there's, they made they claimed the Cody fella from the Senators. So, I guess in the scheme of things, from a personal thing, I'd like to see the team do something. Obviously not to try and compete, but according to Down Goes Brown, he actually had a good tweet, which was, if we had the gold plan, this is the part where the Wings were eliminated from a playoff contention last night. Too bad. So sad. He had said under the gold plan, this is where the Wings would load up, because with the gold plan, it means that the second year eliminated, the teams that get the most points throughout the end of the season, they end up with the number one pick. So that world actually was far more enticing to me. So I wish Monday were this is where the Red Wings, trade away all the, the dead weight to somehow figure out a way to like be the most competitive team down the stretch, even though they mathematically can't make it. So, I obviously, like I said, a bunch of defensemen have been moved. I would love to see a team just like completely swing for the fences and give up some absurd package to get like either like the face of another franchise or, but I guess what my heart really wants is I want a big goaltender trade. That's what I want out of Monday. I want one team to offer questionable assets, just not in terms of just like a questionable amount, like, did he talk to the owners about this? Does he have the ability to just do this by himself type package for just for no good reason? Like you said, because Boston got better, that obviously means the target on their back got that much bigger. So I would like to see some team respond in kind, because yes, at the end of the day, I think that while Boston getting better is like goodish in terms of like making everybody kind of stay on their toes, because I saw that, the Lightning got Coleman from New Jersey. It'd be really, really funny to see just like the Lightning just go like completely overboard to try and avoid what happened last year because they got outed by the Jackets. Just like first, like they find a way to trade for like, they get Lundqvist and like Lundqvist like on the plane ride, like touches the sky and gets superhuman powers, and all of a sudden like the Lightning are a lock or something. I don't know. Again, this is like you said, this is all speculation. This is all stuff I like to see. So like I said, personal level, I'd like to see the Wings offload some stuff, because at the end of the day, while they do have the best odds, it does suck that the combination of the San Jose and Ottawa picks could have them land in a better position than us. So obviously some insurance in that regard. Flip side is we don't really have too much to offer in that case, but we do have some things, you know, but I just hope, in the truest sense of the word, I just hope everybody has fun. Monday, I just hope everybody has a good game. I just hope everybody has fun.
Yeah. So, we'll see, we'll see what comes out of that. This episode is going to drop on Monday, which is the trade deadline. The following episode, we can talk about if there were any big blockbuster trades, anything like that. We can obviously talk about that. And hopefully by then I will be a little bit more mentally rested to be able to talk more coherently. And we can talk about basically it'll kind of be like we'll be looking at the playoff push, you know, like who's. You know, who we think is going to make it. Obviously we are always 100% right in our predictions. So now is the time where I have to think, part of me wants to go back and listen to our season predictions. And part of me is like, it's okay. You can just pretend everything. You can just pretend everything was great. Everything was perfect. You nailed every single thing. So before we wrap up, we have a big anniversary in the hockey world to celebrate this this weekend. I think today, as we record it, right, is the anniversary.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal for everybody that saw it, and then now it's an even bigger deal because it is a moment of extreme note in the history of not just the sport but also the country itself. The Miracle on Ice, yes, that's what we're talking about. What's nice is there's a chunk of the team still alive, which is cool. So they obviously have great stories from that era. I know NBC Sportsnet did a documentary to air about. I know that there's a couple of different events that are happening today, and there's content aplenty from both the NHL and Team USA to sate everyone's curiosity about, just how ridiculous it was. Because, again, I think the part that a lot of people continue, maybe not overlook or maybe not champion the most out of it, but these were amateur players playing against career professionals. This was a, I don't know if we're still, I still think they played a Russian team that was still very much, very much a good team. I don't think this was they were on their decline and the USA got to get in a timely counterpunch to knock them off the pedestal. I think this was as miraculous as it was advertised and called by the famous Al Michaels. So, Pete, what was your first interaction with this event? When did you first hear about it and what did you think when you first
there's
learned it?
It's interesting because this is one of two events that were kind of foundational for me as a hockey person. However, I was not I was alive and I was sentient. I was conscious, but I don't have a memory of this because basically for the first Islanders championship in 1980 and as well as the this gold medal, my dad was watching and I was in the room, and I remember for one of them, I think he woke me up by screaming when they won. I think it was the Islander game, but I'm not 100% sure. but yeah, so I mean, I was alive for this. Obviously I don't have any memory of it happening. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's just something that, if you're a hockey fan, every now and then this just comes up. This is mentioned. Obviously, there was the movie that came out, I guess not too recently, but, relatively recently compared to when the event happened. There's a movie that is, a really great movie, very fun to watch. So, yeah, I think. I think that's that's kind of like how I have experienced this, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were alive. I I was gifted to the earth a mere 6 years later. I'm glad that you have those moments actually happen while you're breathing the sweet, sweet air of this planet Earth. I would say that there's, I would think that a lot of people, at least from my current age group, I'd like to think that pretty much it's all of our dads that figured out a way to teach it to us. For the life of me, I can't remember, I remember reading about it a bunch, but it was really the Kurt Russell Miracle movie that piqued my interest in it. And what was weird was my first thought, the second the credits started rolling, I was like, wait, they didn't keep playing hockey? Like it had all the, like, their current jobs at the release of the movie. And I was like, oh, that kind of stinks, you know, like how ridiculous would that have been? Like, the team of complete nobodies, they tapped into the ethereal immortality juice. They not only beat Russia, they became the winningest team of all time. Split up Team USA, they could have said. But, there's a lot to derive from it. You can, you know, and I think the movie does a fantastic job of kind of setting the scene of what the political climate was and what the team represented to so many people. And, you know, I love the shot of them, you know, walking out for the game against Russia, and they're all tapping all the different telegrams and all the different letters that they've hung up on the wall outside their locker room. And, you know, there is some good old fashioned American patriotism happening on there, the good kind, as it were. And, you know, it was just really nice to see, you know, a moment like that played out and done so well. The director of that film, his name is escaping me at the moment, but he's been, I believe, Gavin O'Connor is his name. I might be completely wrong on that, but he also did the movie Warrior with Tom Hardy and I forget his name, but he played Uncle Owen Lars in Revenge of the Sith and Attack of the Clones. So that was also a phenomenal effing film. And you know, there's something to be said about being able to, you know, because sometimes sports movies, it kind of sucks to have it is Gavin O'Connor. It's sometimes sports don't translate well to film. So it was really nice for just a really well-made film to demonstrate a really awesome moment. And then, you know, recently Mike Tirico sat down with Al Michaels talking about it. And, you know, again, we're still talking about back then, you were pretty much at the mercy of the news organizations and the media outlets. Because, the game itself was aired on tape delay in the States, but it was aired live in Canada. So everybody in Canada got to watch it live. But then, you know, I think it was during one of the recent games, Keith Jones was saying, like, yeah, he lived near the border. So he had Canadian channels, but he also got the American channels as well. So he watched it live, and then he tuned in later that night to watch it again because it was just over the top. So,
absolutely. Yeah.
And then there was the dumbing thing for me. I was just like, yeah, and they win the gold medal. Oh no, they didn't win the gold medal against Russia. Yeah. They just beat Russia on the way to the gold medal. Oh, okay. All right. I mean, I guess that takes a little bit of the no. That's still exactly. Good. That's still good. I mean, it kind of just pushes.
Yeah. So, I guess that brings us to the end of our show for this week, right? Or this episode.
I think you're right. Yeah, it does. You know, we can tell everybody to go celebrate, wave an American flag, drink a beer, tell Russia they suck. You know, because that's what the Miracle on Ice is.
Exactly.
Want us
absolutely.
To do, right?
I cannot think of one reason why not.
Yep.
Okay. So, thank you so much to everybody for listening. Like I said, I really hope that next episode I'm in a little bit. I'm more mentally rested. Because this was kind of a struggle, but I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we did it because we took a little time off, and part of that is because we've been working to try to get Katie on as a guest, and the timing has just been tough, especially obviously with her working on this story all the time. And so we were very, very fortunate that we were able to make that work.
And then on top of that, Pete, we were on the road.
Yes.
We did do a little... do a little jaunt down Columbus Way for the Blue Jackets Analytics Conference. So, you know, it's been a minute, but you know, things are heating up. we're coming up on playoffs, and we can start talking about, you know, potential matchups and stuff, and then complain about other things, yeah. Which is just the tradition that just keeps on giving here at the For Sure Podcast.
Yeah, so I think what we can do is next episode we'll have to remind ourselves we could talk a little bit about Columbus, because I think it was a lot of fun. I think it's definitely something we could talk about.
Yeah.
I think we got some good stuff to share. So. Yeah, so thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks. As usual, we should hopefully be back on a schedule now of, you know, every 2 weeks, give or take every now and then. So if you want to follow us, you can follow us on social media. I am at P Flynn Hockey on Twitter. Jay is at @TheRoar_24. You can find our podcast at 200 Foot Pod, 200 FTPOD. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/forsurepod, FERSUREPOD. And you can find our merchandise. Our merchandise store is tinyurl.com/forshirt, which is FERSHIRT. We have lots of cool stuff there. I was showing Jay last night that I am eventually going to have to get a new throw-low, because Eddie has decided that he's basically at war with anything in our house that is cloth-based with stuffing inside of it. The good news is he has gotten a little bit better at that. We're working on it. We're taking him to training classes and stuff starting soon. But yeah, I'm definitely going to have to replace that at some point. So if you have a dog that has chewed up one of your throw pillows, you can get a For Sure one if you want. So go check that out. Lots of good stuff there. And we will be back in a couple weeks.
For sure.
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 For sure.